أشهد أن محمد رسول الله. أشهد أن محمد
رسول الله. السلام عليكم. Peace be unto you. We're back for another episode of Islam in Focus. I'm your host, Hamid Rashid. Today we continue with our ongoing series dealing with the sources of Islam. In recent weeks we've been examining the linguistic miracle of the Quran. Today we'll be looking more particularly at precision of Quranic expression. I have joining me on the program as usual Dr. Jamal Battery of St. Mary's University. Brother Jamal, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Could I have you very quickly highlight the main points that we touched on in our last program dealing with the linguistic miracle of the Quran?
Sure. We started looking at some of the unique characteristics of the Quranic style of expression, which are not to be found in the writings of any human, some of which are the strange and amazing balance between precision and comprehensiveness in a way which is of consistent quality throughout the Quran, and in a way which cannot leave any room for improvement or editing. Secondly, the balance between addressing the human mind and intellect and the human feeling and emotions also in a way that combines between truth and beauty, between wisdom and feeling. Thirdly, the balance in terms of addressing people from various backgrounds, various levels of intellect, experience and knowledge, but still all of them can understand it easily, appreciated by the simple person as well as the more educated person. We have given specific examples of this, how the Quran deals with the question of oneness of Allah, not in a very philosophical or dry way, but we have seen again the emotional, intellectual mix that is found in the Quranic expression. We gave another example of the law of equality in terms of deliberate murder, like in the second surah in the Quran. And we have seen again that while it is very precise, it's quite different from the dry language we use normally in the law. And we indicated that the strange thing about the Quran, that while it looks easy to follow and the flow is, you know, very simple and uncomplicated, the same expression could have a number of shades of meanings that people discover generation after generation. A meaning that are not necessarily contradictory, but we have seen that they could be quite complementary, like the example we get from Surah 2, verse 212 in the Quran last time. And that showed again the variety of meanings in the very same expression without need for editing or updating the text of the Quran.
Mm-hmm. Well, turning now to the question of precision, there are some Orientalists who claim that there are redundancies in the Quran, words or letters which are added only to keep the line. What is your response to that?
The initial response is that it affects only the extent of their understanding of the subtleties of the Arabic language. One can study a language as a second language and can have even some in-depth information, but doesn't mean necessarily that you get to the full subtleties of the language itself. I think this is the main problem. The best way would be to quote people who are specialists, who are of the Arabic tongue and who have specialized training in this, like Dr. Draz, to whom we have referred before, we referred to today, and others also. And this matter has been analyzed in detail. Let me take one example from Dr. Draz's volume. When the Quran, for example, speaks about the Creator, God, capital G, nowhere in the Quran it uses the Arabic term, for example, لَيْسَ مِثْلَهُ شَيْءٍ. It uses a very similar term, لَيْسَ كَمِثْلِهِ شَيْءٍ. Just one letter difference between the two statements. Both of them, in fact, mean that basically that God is not similar to any of his creatures. I mean, both of them can give that meaning for anyone who looks at the surface. The only difference is just one letter. And we find the Quran always used the sentence with that additional letter, kaf, chemically. But based on the rules of the language, if you look at it, you find that this letter means a lot. By the way, this is found in Surah 42, in verse 11. This has a very good reason behind it. Why? If you use the term that the Quran didn't use with one letter less, it means that there is nothing like God, but there could be something comparable to Him, but less than Him. For example, you could say that 1 million is much bigger than 4. But still, you can compare 4 and 1 million on some scale. You said million is much, much greater than 4, but still, it's comparable. Whereas the terminology used in the Quran with that additional letter, ka, means nothing even is comparable unto Allah. So it's not that He's so great that nobody can come close to Him, but He could be something close in between man and God, for example, or angels or whatever. No. It speaks that there's no even, nothing, no creatures, nothing whatsoever is even comparable unto Him. And that shows the very meticulous expression which eliminates any way even of comparing with that. Just like when you say compare number one to infinity. It's incomparable. One versus million years, but one versus infinity. And God is infinite. So you see the subtleties of expression, which is very important. And this is not the only example. There are many others. In fact, there are examples in the Quran, in addition to this one I gave, pertaining to the claim of additional letters or redundant letters. There are examples where some words or portions of sentences or passages in the Quran may appear to be redundant, but it has a very good reason to be there. There are cases where the Quran uses two different words, which may appear on the surface as synonymous words. One is used in one verse, the other is used in another verse, and both appear to give the same meaning. And sometimes you wonder, why was it used? But it has a good reason also. In some cases we find that the Quran omits certain, you know, propositions or letters or words. But some people say, it must have been there. There's no consistency. Why was that omitted? And again we find there is a very good reason for omission, that it doesn't appear in the sentence at all. There are cases where the Quran reverses the order of words in the same sentence. In other words, you could have two sentences in the Quran talking about basically the same thing, but in one of them we find that the order of words is reversed. And some people say, why? Is that a mistake or something, where basically one statement and somebody just put it wrong? In some cases also, on the surface, there may appear to be inconsistency in the Quran. Why? Sometimes it might be using in the same passage singular and then shifts to the plural. And some people say, why not use singular in both or plural in both of them? These are all examples of things that may appear to some of those orientalists and editors of encyclopedias, including the respectable ones. Unfortunately, they all fall into the same kind of errors of not really trying to delve beyond what appeared on the surface to find out what is the subtleties of expressions in the Quran.
Well, the one example that you just used was a very interesting one, but just to take the point a little bit further, can you give another example where a single letter makes a difference in meaning?
Single letter. All right. Another example is mentioned, and all of the remaining examples perhaps you can draw from another very good writer whose specialty actually is in the eloquence of the Quran. That's Sheikh Muhammad Mutawalli Sha'rawi. He has written on that in a number of publications, but one of his best books, and that is called Mu'jizat al-Quran, that is the miracle of the Quran. That's his specialty, his training. And he, for example, refers to two citations in the Quran. Both of them addresses the human to be patient when something bad happened to him or something, you know, injury happens to him. The expression is looks exactly identical with the exception of one word. It says, in one case, for example, in Surah 31, in verse 17, وَاصْبِرْ عَلَى مَا أَصَابَكَ إِنَّ ذَلِكَ مِنْ عَزْمِ الْأُمُورِ. That is, be patient in whatever happened to you, because this is the characteristics of those people who have determination. In the other one, it almost looks identical. It says, إِنَّ ذَلِكَ لَمِنْ عَزْمِ الْأُمُورِ. So even if you don't know Arabic, إِنَّ ذَلِكَ مِنْ عَزْمِ الْأُمُورِ. إِنَّ ذَلِكَ لَمِنْ عَزْمِ الْأُمُورِ. Mm-hmm. What's the difference?
لَا.
But exactly the sentence is the same. Again, that second one appears, for example, in 42-43. But there is a very important reason. Why? In the Arabic language, when you add this la, it means that this is indeed, you're making some emphasis. This is indeed good. This is truly good. So there is more emphasis. Why was that emphasis used in one rather than the other? The reason is that if you go back to the context of each of these verses, mm-hmm. you find that the first one, that is in 31:17, it speaks about something that may happen to you not caused by an adversary. Like, for example, if somebody is driving on the highway and a big rock falls from the mountain on his car and damages part of his car. Of course, that's bad. He's injured because of that, or he feels bad because he lost money on his car. But the patience here would be a little easier to take because there is no enemy that he feels, you know, antagonistic towards. It's just something that happened. He could not control it. That is the context of that verse, which doesn't have that emphasis. Whereas the second one, when the emphasis that this is truly good or this is truly characteristic of good people, which appear in 42-43, it speaks about somebody causing injury to you. That's why the verse actually before that speaks about those who have patience and forgive, which means that there is an injury that happened to you, but someone else, some enemy, mm-hmm. caused you that injury. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you need more patience in the second case than the first. Why? Because in the second case, you have to be patient because of the wrong that has been done to you, the hurt that you've been through. But you need patience also to resist the instinct to have revenge against that enemy who caused you that injury, which means that you have double need for patience and self-control. And that is why you find that the verse in the Quran, in the second case, add this just one additional letter, which means a lot in terms of conveying the very accurate meaning in the Quran.
So you spoke of what some may see as a redundant letter. Are there any examples of claim of redundant words or sentences?
Yes. For example, in the Quran, in several places, I'll just give two examples. In Surah 3, Ayah 135, and in Surah 4, Ayah 109. In both of these, it simply conveys one basic message. That it says basically that if someone does something wrong or evil, and then it says, or wrongs his or her own soul, and then it continues, then ask Allah forgiveness, Allah will forgive him. Now the question here is this. It says if someone does something wrong or evil, why does it have to add or wrongs his soul? Is it not the same thing? When we do something wrong, we're wronging our souls. I mean, why add that? Is that just an extra? The answer is definitely no. Why? Because the question of wronging one's soul or doing something wrong are degrees also. I could do something wrong by, for example, being tempted towards something that does not belong to me, but I still have some benefit or at least have some payoff. Mm-hmm. Example, if somebody steals something, he's done something wrong, but he's got some payoff. He was motivated in doing this by his desires to get this property.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing if someone commits adultery, someone, you know, gets intoxicated or something like that. So there is a sort of payoff.
Mm-hmm.
You do wrong because you think that you want to achieve some immediate pleasure. However, there is another type of wronging the soul. You could do something wrong without benefiting yourself, just hurting someone else. Not because you'd get his benefits or anything, but just to hurt him, bearing a false witness against someone,
mm-hmm.
just trying to prevent something good from happening to someone else. You haven't got any good yourself, but you're doing that just out of one may do that just out of malice without necessarily benefiting from it. And that's what the Quran refers to as wronging one's soul. So again, it's not extra. In other words, it deals with both situations of doing evil for a benefit or doing evil just for the sake of hurting others. And that could make a difference also in the meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Well, some letters also claim that there are synonymous words or expressions used in the Quran which don't seem to have any explanation except to keep the rhyme of the Quran. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
No, it's not. And in fact, remember, there's one statement that was quoted from Dr. Jazz last time, which we would clarify further in answering that question. When he said the challenge for whole humanity, really, is that you could go through the entire Quran from A to Z. And he says, in any particular context or passage, find a word in all Arabic dictionary that would be a better expression than the actual word in the Quran, which means that there's absolutely no room for improvement. And that doesn't apply to the writing of any human being. Absolutely. I mean, you search any dictionary, no better word can express the meaning in that context than this specific word. But again, we don't want to just put it as a claim. We have to really get into substance. Now, take one example. When the Quran speaks about the attitude of some unbelievers, one appear in Surah 3, one appear in Surah 5. In one case, it says, basically, that when it's told to them, come to what Allah or what God has revealed, you find that they, reject and they just follow what, or claim to follow what their parents did. In both of them, it's basically the same expression, really, more or less. But again, we'll get to the subtleties. That people reject the truth simply because they say that we found our parents following this particular path. However, in one verse, it ends by saying, say, if their parents did not reflect or understand, would they still follow them? Whereas the second verse says, if their parents didn't know anything, would they follow them? Now, what's the difference between reflecting and knowing? And how does that relate to the context of both passages in the Quran? By further examination, we will find that in the first expression, talking about the parents not reflecting, the context is to invite them to believe in God, in the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
And the word reflect here means that if their parents only thought, used their own faculties, reflected on the creation of the universe, they would have concluded that this universe is created by one and only supreme power.
Mm-hmm.
So it ends with reflect. Whereas the context of the second verse, it talks about coming to the, or believing in the revelation of God, and it says also, or mentioned the prophet, the messenger. And here we find that there is another degree other than just reflecting and understanding, because in reflection you discover something by yourself, you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But knowledge, you may not reflect, but learn from someone else. If somebody you trust and believe in his or her integrity tell you something, even without discovering that yourself, you can learn or know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In the second case, the response of the unbelievers is that, no, enough for us what we found our parents doing. Which means that not only are they refusing to think, they are even refusing to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Ready knowledge that is already coming to them. So again, look at the subtle difference where, you know, one would not even notice any difference, but there's a reason before it. Another example. In the Quran, there are two verses also. One in 72:16, one in 76:21. In both cases, it talks about God giving water for us to drink, or giving us drink. Very simple. However, it uses two different terms in each, one term in each of the passages. One is called asqahum, the other saqahum. Both of them, if you really look at it or try to translate it into English, and actually you can't detect that from English translations, it simply seems God, or means God gave them drink or something, or water.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, if you look at it linguistically, the word asqahum that appears in the first passage means that God provided the water, but you've got to do some effort to get it. God placed the water in the rivers or in the well. So he gave it to you. But you still have to get a bucket and robe and get that water out. Whereas in the Arabic language, when you say saqahum, used in the second passage, means that you don't have to do any efforts even. It comes to you. And if you go back to the context of these verses, you will be really surprised. Because in the first one, which refers to water being available, but you have to do some effort to get it, it talks about the life in this, on this earth, that God provides us with this, and then we can use it. Whereas the second expression, that is getting water without any effort, it speaks about the life hereafter, in paradise, where, as we know in Islamic thinking, in paradise, you don't have to do any effort, everything comes to you. Again, on the surface, one would say, more maybe it was just the rhyme, to keep the rhyme that the Quran used, one term here and the other term here. But in fact, if you look at it, there could be no substitute. You can't replace one with the other because each one has a different, shade of meaning.
Well, now, let's examine the opposite side of the coin, so to speak. It's sometimes claimed that the Quran, in order to, again, to keep a present rhyme, drops certain words which likely should be included. What's your comment on that?
There's an excellent example of this provided by Sheikh Sha'rawi in his book Miracle of the Quran, and a very interesting one. It describes some of the statements on the tongue of Prophet Abraham, and that appears in Surah 26 from verses 78 to 82, starting with الَّذِي خَلَقَنِي فَهُوَ يَهْدِينَ وَالَّذِي هُوَ يُطْعِمُنِي وَيَسْقِينَ. In this ayah, or this passage, there are six basic things that Prophet Abraham is mentioning about the omnipotence, power, and compassion of the Creator. Six. One, basically he says that creation, that God is the Creator, He who created me. Secondly, it talks about guidance, that He is the one to provide guidance. Thirdly, that Allah provides sustenance, that's food and drink. Four, that God is the real one who gives cure when we are ill. Fifth, that God is the one who gives life and death. And sixthly, that God is the one who forgives sins in the day of judgment. Now, the thing that is really striking, is that in all of these six items, in some of them, it say refers to God using pronoun He, that is He who gives food and drink, for example, in three of them. In the other three, it drops pronoun, and not consistent, not like half and half. But for example, in the first item, it does not refer to God by the pronoun He. In the second, third, and fourth item, it refers to God in each time it's repeated with the pronoun He. In five and six, fifth and sixth items, it drops He. If you look at it, one would have absolutely no way of understanding why. Why did it not use it all the way? And again, like you said earlier, some Orientalists say, oh, yeah, just to keep the rhyme pleasant, or make some variation so that it doesn't get boring when you keep repeating he six times, so just variation of that. Again, that's not at all the wisdom behind it. Why? In the first item, and the fifth and the sixth, are items which no human being can dispute with God, even if he may be unbeliever. Because it talks, for example, about God as the Creator. And of course, even an unbeliever cannot claim that, say, oh, I did create this earth, I did create Saturn or Mars or the moon. Nobody can make that claim of creation. And the fifth item are items also that no human being claim to have power, giving life and death. God created the life, for example, in the womb of the mother and so on. And when the person dies naturally, at least, you know, it's God's will anyway. The sixth item, it speaks about God's forgiving quality in the day of judgment. And of course, nobody claims to say, all right, when we resurrect in the day of judgment, I forgive. It is only God who is capable and able to forgive. And that is item 1, 5, and 6. The ones in the middle, dealing with guidance, God providing food and drink, God curing our diseases, this could be disputed. Example, if I am a boss in some company, and if I am not unbeliever, God forbid, I could tell the one, all right, I control your food and drink because I could fire you. At least some people can make that false claim.
Mm-hmm.
Or a person could be a medical doctor and he can tell the patient, for example, it is not God who cures you, it is me. Because if I don't diagnose your sickness and give you the medicine, no way, you cannot have that cure. Guidance. People also could claim, no, I have better guidance than God's. You know, these are obsolete things. I have better ideas and start arguing that the way of life or ideology is better than what God has revealed. So in the items that are indisputed, even by the unbelievers, you find that the word he is dropped, that there is no need for emphasis. You don't say, it is he who created me. You say, he simply start by, who created me, without the reference or use of pronoun. Because it's indisputable. Whereas when it talks about issues that some unbelievers can dispute, Prophet Ibrahim is emphasizing every time, no, it is he, Allah, who guides. Allah, it is he who gives food and drink. It is he who gives cure, to draw to our attention that even in these areas that may be thought to be disputable, the ultimate sovereignty and power indeed lie exclusively in the hand of God. So this is, again, like I said, something that a person would not even notice, much less if you're reading an English translation or any translation of the meaning of the Quran in any other language. But you see the secret of the expression, that you can't have even one thing dropped except for a good reason.
Yes, dear. Well, perhaps we can turn now to the reversals in the order of certain words in some of the passages.
Mm-hmm.
What is the explanation for that?
Well, again, the best way to explain it is to give some examples of this. Two verses in the Quran, which deal basically with the same thing. They look almost like identical if you count the words and the meaning they convey, but in one there is reversal of order. In Surah 6, Ayah 151, and in Surah 17, Ayah 31, both of them, in fact, prohibit or end the female infanticide practice that some of the Arabs used to kill their children alive,
mm-hmm.
because of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
However, in one of them it says, do not kill your children, the first one in Surah 6, do not kill your children because of poverty, because God provided for you and them.
Mm-hmm.
Notice here, you first and them. In the second one it says, do not kill your children خشيته, for fear of poverty, because God provides for them and you. The question here is why, in one case, you and them, in the other case, them and you, even though it's basically the same meaning.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it carefully, you notice that in the first passage, it deals with existing poverty. In other words, don't kill your child because you are poor now. And when the person is poor, he would be concerned, of course, more about his own sustenance even.
Yes.
So he said, all right, if I have children again, that would be even be more difficult. How could I live, survive?
Yes.
That's why the passage in the Quran assures the individual, because that's his main concern. No, God provides for you and for them and for your children. Whereas in the second passage, it deals not with a person who is poor now. You may not be poor. But one would say, all right, if I get many children, how could I look after them? If I have only one child, I can look after, but if I get too many children, I can't provide for them. So you don't fear, you don't have poverty now, but you fear future poverty,
mm-hmm.
because your concern more is on providing for your children. That's why the verse reverses the order by saying God provide for them, starting with them first,
mm-hmm.
and you, because you're already, you can survive now. So this is again, is something which is not only eloquent or suitable, but perhaps it is the most effective way of conveying the meaning in both cases, depending on the specific context of the Quran.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brother Jamal, thank you very much for an interesting program. We want to thank you all for watching.
and invite you back next week when we'll continue our discussion of the linguistic miracle of the Quran. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.
أشهد أن محمد رسول الله.